This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
If you missed any of the first 3 hours of our show, you missed a lot. Go back, ESPN app, wherever podcasts are found, and listen to our podcast. You'll get nuggets like that from Adam Schefter talking about Mike Trout of the Angels, huge Philly sports fan, texting him trying to get Michael Parsons to the Eagles. And also, you heard a little Olivia Rodrigo there. He went to an Olivia Rodrigo concert with his daughter and said the last two concerts he's been to with his daughter, Taylor Swift and Olivia Rodrigo. Taylor Swift for him, Smalls is
Tom Brady.
And Olivia Rodrigo compared to Will Levis. Will Levis could be good. That's a huge drop-off, though.
Big time.
Yeah, I tried to lead him into saying it was Mahomes, and he went with Will Levis.
That says a lot about how he ranks those two pop princesses.
No doubt. All right, last night's awesome performance by UConn. Back-to-back, they win their second straight title, 75-60, over Purdue. A 15-point win, which is 8.3 points less than the average margin of victory that they have had all tournament long, 23.3. They have a 37-3 record this year. They were up at halftime 36-30. They went on to win the game 75-60. Tristan with 20 points, Stephon Castle with 15, Donovan Clingan, who was good, not as good as he had been previously in the tournament last night, with 11. Zach Edey, to his credit, 37 points, 10 boards for Purdue. He gave everything he had, but it wasn't close to enough. And UConn became the third back-to-back champion since the tournament expanded in 85. Duke 91-92, Florida 06 and 07. And now this one is really remarkable. The six titles that they have, there are four schools, including UConn, with six or more titles. UCLA has 11, Kentucky has 8, UNC and UConn are tied with 6, which means more titles in Duke, more titles in Kansas, more titles in Indiana. Think about that. UConn, all done in the last 25 years. Danny Hurley with 2 here, and this team back-to-back. Remarkable.
It's unbelievable what they were able to do and just how dominant they were in the second half of that game against Purdue last night. I mean, Purdue had no answers for what UConn was doing on the offensive end, being able to isolate Zach Edey and put him in situations where high screen and rolls and be able to get two guys going downhill at the basket and Zach Edey being caught in no man's land. And then defensively, how they were able to shut off the faucet on everybody else on Purdue's team, not named Zach Edey. Yeah, Edey got his. He dropped 37 points. But nobody else was able to get all for Purdue. And I thought that was a big difference. Like, you're talking about only one player on Purdue's team having an assist. That's it. Just one player on the team having an assist. That is it. That is fascinating.
That's mind-blowing.
The fact that they could lock down in that way, not really allowing those perimeter shooters to get going, not helping on Zach Edey, allowing their bigs, Donovan Clingan, amongst others, to take to match up with him one-on-one defensively. I thought that was masterclass in terms of being able to establish a game plan and stick to a game plan. Tim Legler was pointing that out when he was with us in the 8 o'clock hour, and it is absolutely true, and I think that's a credit to how much belief the players on UConn have in Dan Hurley and his ability to put them in situations where they can have success.
Absolutely. This is one of the most dominant runs that we've ever seen, these back-to-back championships. And Evan, you keep saying it's two in a row, not back-to-back, because we can't forget that Dan Hurley did this with an entirely new cast of characters than he did with the national championship team last year. And he did it in a more dominant fashion. So not only, CeCe, did they buy in, like you just said, they did so quickly with an entirely different group of people. Last year, they won their tournament games by an average of 20 points per game. This year, as you said, Evan, increase that 23.3 points, which means that they have had 12 straight tournament wins by at least 10 points dating back to last season. And by the way, this is a tournament where their identity, their calling card, is that unpredictability, that any team could win on any given night, that even the dominant teams could be susceptible to a certain matchup. And UConn has not only not fallen into that trap this season, but last season. It's just really, really mind-blowing when you think about what Dan Hurley's been able to do at UConn.
And they're not loaded with star-caliber NBA players here, right? I mean, the University of Florida, when they won back-to-back, had legit unbelievable players that were top picks in the draft. I mean, Joakim Noah was all NBA center, I think, at one point, and may have finished third in MVP voting one year. Al Horford has been an All-Star multiple times and has been he's still in the league. He's still on the Celtics from when he played 06 and 07. Corey Brewer was in the league probably a decade, and if I'm not mistaken, had a 50-point game once. Do we see that from this group? Do we see a ton of NBA players? I mean, maybe we're going to see them. I don't know. You look back at those Duke teams, they had Christian Laettner. They had Grant Hill, who was on the broadcast last night. They had Bobby Hurley, who was a lottery pick and unfortunately got into a car accident and obviously wasn't able to play the majority of the rest of, you know, and then career obviously changed in that spot. Cherokee Parks even had a cup of coffee in the league. Like, they had NBA guys. This is a team that is just a great college team 2 years in a row. They are so smart. They are so competitive. And now you look at this UConn program, they are the best program in college basketball. North Carolina can't claim that. Duke can't claim that. Kansas can't claim that. UCLA can't claim that. Indiana cannot.
Kentucky can't.
Kentucky sure as heck can't claim that, as they've already gotten a no from Jay Wright and Nate Oates, Alabama coach. This is the best program in America on the men's side right now, and their peers would be Alabama football, the New England Patriots, and Los Angeles Lakers as the only other men's programs in sports that have won six titles over the last 25 years. So, how did this happen?
So is this like, are we starting to view UConn men's basketball the way we view the Kansas City Chiefs, where we say that they're kind of peerless in that way and that we start their clock essentially at the AFC Championship round? Like, is that what we're going to do with UConn?
We should. I mean, they're 12-1 in the Final Four. And Dan Hurley is 12-2 in NCAA tournament games as the head coach at UConn. So we absolutely should view them through the same lens as the Kansas City Chiefs or what we saw with the New England Patriots, where seemingly every other year they were going to the Super Bowl over the span of two decades. Or, you know, Alabama, which was a BCS college football playoff caliber team every single year. Like, that's what we have to assign to UConn. Even though we don't feel like there is that generational talent that's on the team year over year.
Mahomes.
Even though they don't have that. Right. They still have that level of team success, and I think that's what makes what Dan Hurley is doing special, the culture that he's able to establish and continue, especially in this era of NIL and transfer portal, things that Kevin Ollie and Jim Calhoun didn't necessarily have to deal with.
You bring up the Chiefs. We got an interesting tweet. Andrew tweets at ASB1216. More likely to three-peat, UConn men's hoops or the Chiefs? It's weird that we have a double three-peat possibility in this at the same time in sports. UConn men's basketball, he tweets at On Sports ESPN. UConn men's basketball or the Chiefs? That's a hard one.
I'm always going to bet on talent, so give me Patrick Mahomes. So I'll say more likely to three-peat, I'm going to go with Mahomes. I'm going to go with Mahomes.
Has Danny Hurley become an equal talent, so to speak? Like, is he an? I mean, Mahomes is an all-time great.
Danny Hurley ain't shooting no jump shots.
No.
So
good for UConn that he's not.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't a great jump shooter when he played. He was. For those who don't remember
of all days.
For those who don't remember
shade?
Him as a player.
Eclipse level
Eclipse,
shade.
Yeah.
Get your special glasses he on. Was, Evan's coming.
He was exactly the kind of player at Seton Hall that you would expect him to be. Just feisty, nasty, and helping everybody along the way with him. They're like legendary stories. There was this guy, Jerry Walker. Do you remember Jerry Walker? You probably did.
No.
He's like a random player at Seton Hall. He played for St. Anthony's, and they were like legendary stories of like these guys walking to school together, and Jerry Walker was this big, tough, strong guy at Seton Hall, and he was best friends with the Hurleys, of course, right? Because they like only associate with grimy and nasty, and that's the kind of player he was. He wasn't a jump shooter like some of his guys now, but this is the kind of mentality that this family has always had, like the Harbaughs.
Yeah.
Seth Greenberg came in a couple weeks ago and said it. It's unbelievable the similarities between the Harbaughs and these guys.
A lot of parallels there between the two families. And now that we're having this conversation and talking through it, I think I'm going to have to pick UConn as the team that I think has the best chance to repeat.
Really? Okay.
Even though I learned my lesson last year in doubting Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs, and thinking about it, there are teams that push the Chiefs to the brink. The Bills, obviously in the Super Bowl, the 49ers. We've seen the Bengals go toe-to-toe with them. The Ravens, certainly, they didn't, not in the playoffs this year, but they have a lot of talent and could go against the Chiefs. UConn has dominated everyone for 2 years with a completely different cast of characters year to year. Why would I think anyone could hang with them? Quite literally, no one can.
Yeah, but we say quarterback is the most important position in all of team sports.
Yes.
And Patrick Mahomes is the greatest quarterback I've ever seen.
There's
point. He's the greatest quarterback I've ever seen. Like, I played against Tom Brady. I played against Aaron Rodgers. I played against Brett Favre. He's the greatest quarterback I've ever seen. I just can't doubt Patrick Mahomes. The guy wins a Super Bowl, goes back to back, and the first thing out of his mouth is saying, "We ain't done yet." That's what Patrick Mahomes said right after they beat the 49ers in overtime. "We ain't done yet." I can't go against my homeboy. I just can't.
You know what's interesting?
There's no bad answer here. I'm just going to always side with Patrick Mahomes. It's Mahomes. It's Andy Reid. What's understood ain't got to be said.
Okay, but that all runs through Patrick Mahomes. If, God forbid, knock on wood, that that doesn't happen, that he would get hurt, we're never picking the Chiefs.
No.
Carson Wentz doesn't do it for you as the backup there to lead them to a Super Bowl? No?
Not so much.
No, not so much.
Whereas with UConn, it's not one person that their success is reliant upon.
Fair. Fair.
It's amazing that we talk about parity in sports so much. And yet we are literally talking about two teams that are going for a three-peat. And is that, I don't know who's going to be on South Carolina's roster next year. Anyone want to pick against them?
No, definitely not.
Parity is overrated.
I actually don't think it's good.
Parity is overrated. I mean, the 90s NBA would like to have a word.
Yeah.
There was no parity.
Thank you.
Jordan had two separate three-peats in the same decade.
And it was the best decade of NBA basketball ever.
Parity is so overrated. Fun. It's overrated.
Yeah, like if you told me right now we could see the Chiefs, UConn, and South Carolina all win next year, I'm in. Like, why would that be? No. Oh, you think it's boring?
To have the Chiefs win again, boring.
A three-peat.
No, to have UConn win again,
I want to see the
three-peat.
Give me some fresh blood.
I want the three-peat.
I mean, again, look at some of these teams we're comparing them to. The Pats never three-peated. We haven't had a three-peat since UCLA won 7 in a row with John Wooden. That would put Danny Hurley and UConn above all of these other programs, like, ever, almost.
We've never seen a three-peat in the NFL.
Right, so why? To my knowledge, no, right? Off the top of my head.
In the Super Bowl era?
No, I don't think so.
I mean, the Steelers had a break in there. They won two, lost one.
Pats had a break.
The Pats had a break.
That wouldn't, like, the idea of seeing something in the NFL that we've never seen before wouldn't excite you, Smalls?
No. I just think it's a little boring. But you know what's interesting? I am a child of the 90s and absolutely loved the dominance of the Jordan Bulls. And I don't know why that doesn't translate for me now.
Because you're not a kid.
Maybe.
Right, and that's kind of that we all look at that, and that we make that into something, and I love it more than anything. That is so associated with our childhood. That's why the LeBron versus Michael conversation, which I'm not saying we're having, is an insult to our childhood. Just like whoever's next after LeBron will be an insult to the childhood of those growing up right now, because they look at LeBron and they idolize him. You don't want to mess with your childhood.
But there's just something about Michael Jordan that was so transcendent, and
that's the way people feel about Mahomes. That's why they want to see a three-peat.
I understand, but to me it's more exciting if he has a peer, if there's that versus in there. And right now he doesn't have that. I would like for someone to be able to challenge him, and then maybe if he defeats them, it's another layer of his greatness. I would just like to see someone actually be able to come in and be a true rival to Patrick Mahomes, which we do not have right now.
I don't know. I'm playing out in my head the hypothetical of the Chiefs winning 3 in a row and UConn winning 3 in a row, and how amazing that conversation will be on
our
show.
It'd be awesome. Yeah.
Because we've never seen something like that. We do know one thing. Danny Hurley is going to have a shot for that 3-peat because there is a job that's open that he's not going to. We'll get to that next. It's Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Electric E-Bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin, and the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
Well, it's supposed to be officially announced today.
John Calipari leaving Kentucky for Arkansas. What did I just say? I was saying unsportsmanlike and then Arkansas for un-Arkansas.
You can mind it.
Yeah. Did you just say un-Kansas?
Does that mean Coach Cal will be a friend of the show when he gets to Arkansas?
I don't think if he's listening to the show, he's going to be a friend of the show. We've been a little bit critical, I would think.
Who's
of
been
him.
Critical of Coach Cal?
Well, we did say he shouldn't push his dog in a stroller.
Yeah, that part of the game, yeah. But that just doesn't make any sense.
Paul's not a weird dog name. Paul's an excellent dog name.
An excellent dog name?
Excellent dog name.
Do you have to spell it with a W if it's Paul for a dog, like a paw?
No, because that's cheesy.
Well, I'm just asking.
Paul? P-A-W-L?
I'm asking the question.
Paul?
How do you think he spells his dog's name?
P-A-U-L.
You're positive?
Am I positive? P-A-W-L.
What is happening right now?
We're getting loose
today.
That
was today. You. I didn't even mean to lead you
into
that.
You brought us down this road. You took us down the rabbit hole.
You're welcome.
You did this thing.
With the Paul versus Paul. That's the most absurd thing I've ever heard.
Nobody was thinking about that until you thought
it. Someone definitely
said it. Katie, I know what you're trying to do now.
Wait, you didn't get that?
No, well, I was just,
of course
no.
You did. He's just saying how ridiculous it is.
Somebody else brought that up.
I didn't get it.
Somebody else brought that up. I'm pretty sure.
I did.
I like.
Thank you, Pat.
I said dog names that are human names.
Are we sure it's not just P-A-W, Paul?
Oh, that the dog's name is actually Paul, and we put an L at the end of it, assuming the dog's name was Paul.
Oh. No, it's a good, nice Italian name, right, Paul?
Yeah, Paul.
Is Paul Italian?
Paul Calipari?
Paul Calipari. Paul Calipari, I like
it. We got to listen to the audio again.
I like
it. If we can get that audio again.
She says I like it.
Because we got to listen to him walking the dog in the stroller. So yesterday.
High level conversations between those two.
Oh, no doubt.
Yes.
Paul Calipari, Frankie Smallman.
There you go.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Let's listen to Coach Cal as to what he says his dog's name is. Let's take a listen.
Hey, Coach, you got anything you want to say to your fans?
I'm watching my dog right now.
Anything right now? You want to say anything to your fans right now?
Yeah, I'm good. Come on, Paul.
Paul.
There's an L in there.
There's an L?
Paul.
There's an
L. All
right, WKYT had that video.
It's Paul. That's the consensus. It's Paul. Not Paul. Not Paul.
All right.
It's Paul.
But I will say that the name Paul doesn't really match the dog. This is a very small white dog with a fountain tail. Doesn't really look like a Paul to me.
What does it look like to you?
A Cheryl.
Cheryl. Naming your dog Cheryl.
I mean, if it was a female dog, kind of giving me Cheryl vibes.
Cheryl, okay.
I'm judging the hell out of Coach Cal now because he's got the stroller and he doesn't have a leash on the dog.
I don't
understand it. This doesn't make any sense. The stroller, I can't get past the stroller. Why does he have the damn stroller? It's clear that the dog doesn't have any issues walking. So why do you have the damn stroller there?
Yeah.
What's the point of the stroller?
And leashless by a busy road? What if Paul decides to dart off? He's no bigger than a New York City squirrel. Well, how can drivers see Paul?
I guess he's just not making a trip to Fayetteville.
neither is, he's making the trip, but John Calipari's old job, Kentucky, right? Danny Hurley last night said
good
absolutely
one,
not.
Good one, Adam.
If I got the city's rights, that would have been so close. I'm trying. So Calipari's gone. Hurley's not going there. Nate Oates, Alabama's not going there. Jay Wright's not going there. Will Billy Donovan go there? Will Scott Drew at Baylor go there? Is it a good job at all anymore? Would anyone want to go there?
Well, apparently Scott Drew and Mitch Barnhart, the AD at Kentucky, have a relationship. Mm-hmm. So I just don't know that the AD goes down this road of jettisoning Coach Cal without having somebody that he knows is going to give him a yes and somebody that would be well-received by the fan base. Now, it might not be the type of reception that you would get with your first or second choice, presuming that was Billy Donovan, that was Nate Oates, that was Dan Hurley. But at least it's somebody that has the credentials, that has the resume, that could get you excited about what Kentucky basketball can get back to in terms of restoring some of the luster, right?
Yes.
Scott Drew, when he took over the Baylor program, they were on the doorstep of the death penalty, and that became a program where he was able to win the regular season title in the Big 12, where he was able to win a national championship in 2021, where he's had players transition to the NBA ranks. So I guess that would be somebody that you could sell your fan base on. But it certainly wouldn't be a coach that brings the type of swag, the type of profile that Coach Cal does. So your program is taking a hit, but you're saying to yourselves that we don't mind having a coach with a lower profile as long as it translates to our program being able to have more success when it comes to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, Scott Drew might not be the name or garner the initial excitement that somebody like Billy Donovan would, but this is someone who knows how to recruit, he knows how to develop players, and he knows how to build a program. And if you're Kentucky, isn't that what you want? You didn't like that Coach Cal was recruiting NBA caliber players. It wasn't translating into national championships. And even though he had gotten one, the luster came off of that a while ago, seemingly from Kentucky fans and from the university. But I think Scott Drew would be a really, really good fit there. But I don't know if he would bring that name brand, despite having won an NCAA tournament, that somebody like a Billy Donovan would.
If ESPN Bet had a futures bet on this, and I gave you guys a dollar to bet, you could bet on the success of Kentucky next 5 years of Arkansas next 5 years as it pertains to college winning and losing, not putting guys in the NBA. Where are you going?
Arkansas.
Wow.
Because I don't know if I can trust Kentucky to let whoever they hire actually do the job the way that they want to do it.
And I know that Arkansas is going to give Coach Cal carte blanche.
Oh, they're going to let him build it however he wants, whatever resources you need.
Where's the example that they didn't let Cal do what he wanted to do? He wanted to get one and done, guys. They weren't preventing him from doing that. He didn't care about graduation rate within the 4 or 5 years. They didn't fight him on that. Now, that doesn't mean these guys don't go back and graduate, but you know, for a while, they judge it based on the 4 or 5 years that they're in school. Like, what did they prevent him from doing exactly? I think that somehow the narrative has changed, as if all of a sudden Kentucky was standing in his way of things. What did they stand in his way
well,
of?
Well, essentially, what we're looking at is Coach Cal being propositioned in a way that was not attractive in terms of what he could potentially do this upcoming year. Like, it's clear that Kentucky was trying to get rid of him without having to pay the $33 million buyout. Mm-hmm. So when you hear all the rumblings about how they were shutting off the NIL faucet, how there wasn't going to be the type of financial support from the boosters, how the resources flowing into the program weren't going to be what they were in the past because you haven't had success, if you're framing the upcoming season that way to Coach Cal, you can understand why he would bounce and go to Arkansas.
For sure.
So why are we to assume that they wouldn't be overly involved and have some clear parameters on how the next head coach would operate if they treated Coach Cal in the way that they did, knowing the type of talent that Coach Cal was bringing into the program?
Question, though. Mm-hmm. Is there a chance in all of this that he lost opportunities because of lack of success? Hey, we gave you everything. You didn't do what you were supposed to do here, which is win titles, not produce good young men to go to the NBA.
Here's the problem that
which
I have.
Which he does do.
Here's the problem that I have with that logic. How are you supposed to get back to where they think Kentucky basketball should be with less resources?
Mm. Better coaching. Could Danny Hurley win with his players?
So, I mean, here's the thing. Coach Cal might not be the best coach in all of men's college basketball,
That's right.
But he's still a top 10 coach. He's still a very good coach.
See, I think that you can make the argument, like, Arkansas now will have a bigger brand than they've had since Nolan Richardson.
No doubt.
Kentucky may be able to get a better basketball coach with a lesser brand. And it's the what do you want? Do you want, like, Scott Drew may be a better basketball coach than John Calipari, X's and O's wise. Doesn't have the brand. It's very few.
Well, they want the brand, though. I mean, here's the thing. Tubby Smith was a good basketball coach, and they got rid of him.
They've gotten rid of almost everyone.
But that's my point, though. Yeah. Like, they had a coach that won you a championship, got to a Final Four, and Tubby Smith. They got rid of him because it wasn't good enough.
Right.
That wasn't good enough. They wanted the winning, but they also wanted the cachet. They wanted the clout. You're taking a step back if you're Kentucky basketball by doing what you did with Coach Cal now and him going to Arkansas.
I also think it's amazing how we dismiss Coach Cal winning a national title, saying that that's not enough. It's really hard to win. It is really hard to win this tournament. And I know it's
bad day to say it,
but this is one of the most dominant runs that we've ever seen. This is really rare what we're seeing.
You're 1,000% right. Okay. Everything you're saying, it's just the irony of today is we have a back-to-back champ that won by an average margin of 23.3 points per game. It was hard. Don't get me wrong. But they made it look as easy as any champion has ever made it look. We will talk to, and by the way, so did South Carolina on the women's side.
Yeah, they did.
Even against Caitlin Clark in Iowa. We will talk to a Hall of Famer about the men's and women's game next. It's on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
For the ones who get it done, Grainger offers high-quality supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as access to product specialists who have the knowledge and experience to answer your toughest questions. Plus, their commitment to being your safety partner can help you keep your facility safe and your people safer. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
18.7 million viewers on Sunday for the Women's National Championship between South Carolina and Iowa. Annihilated any other basketball game we have seen in the last 5 years. NBA, WNBA, men's college basketball, women's college basketball. Just a remarkable number. And someone who helped start this entire trend of excitement around women's basketball. She's a Hall of Famer, and she joins us now. It is Nancy Lieberman joining us here on Unsportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance. Nancy, when you hear that number, 18.7 million, it means what to you?
It means that the game has come so far in such a long period of time. We had hoped to have those numbers, and today's generation expects those numbers, and that's called progress.
Nancy, how does women's basketball and women's sports overall maintain this profile, maintain that type of interest, which leads to this viewership? Because there are questions around whether or not this is sustainable for women's college basketball with the exodus of talent led by Caitlin Clark and Angel Reese going to the WNBA ranks, and there are questions about whether or not the fans of those individual talents will follow those players to the WNBA. So I'm curious from your perspective, is this something that's sustainable in terms of the growth in the interest in how that translates to viewerships in women's basketball and women's sports as a whole?
Chris, that's a great question. And you know better than anybody as an athlete who has sustainability. Everything has its cycle. But when ESPN and CBS and ABC and Fox starts putting, you know, women on the big boy networks, now you're going to get the casual fan who falls in love with us. And wasn't that the secret sauce of the Olympics for all those years? It's all of a sudden you start telling those, you know, real stories about these young people or these Olympians, and people fall in love with the stories of who we, the athlete, are. And then they see our talent. So here in real time, you know, and by the way, it tapped out at 24 million. That was the high, which is, you know, freaking amazing right there in itself. But now you have Juju. Now you have, you know, Paige Beckers. Now you have so many of these other young, you know, sensational athletes that there's a fan base. And the fan base is not just in Iowa. It's not just at South Carolina. It's not just at UConn. It's around the world. Like, I was in the arena, and I was just sitting there with my arms crossed, just smiling, because I saw people that looked like they had never left the farm, and they were there in the arena with their kids. Some were affiliated by the power of the logo, and some were not affiliated by the power of the logo. And it's you guys, it's men who are really changing and moving the needle for us long time, because it's no longer, you know, girls' sports or women's sports, it's sports. And the daughters and the granddaughters and the nieces and everybody is a part of growth. It's the numbers, and it's just a beautiful time to be a woman, a female athlete. You know, my dear friend Billie Jean King and I talked to, you wouldn't believe this. When I was 22 years old and I'm at the French Open with Billie Jean, I'm young and dumb, and she looked at me and she goes, Nancy, you have to be a pioneer in this thing, because if you do that, it's going to force others to be pioneers. Caitlin Clark's a pioneer. Angel Reese is a pioneer. Breonna Stewart is a pioneer. Asia Johnson Wilson is a pioneer. These just are paid pioneers. I was an unpaid Olympian. I was an unpaid collegiate athlete, and I'm thrilled to death. I celebrate. I don't tolerate. And I'm just so proud of the media with ESPN, ABC. You guys are collectively, you know, they might have a collective at universities. we have a collective in sports, and you are pushing us over the top. So we will have long-term sustainability and success.
The Hall of Famer Nancy Lieberman joining us here on Unsportsmanlike. I'm Michelle Smallman alongside Chris Canty and Evan Cohen. And Nancy, I want to stick with one of those pioneers that you called out in Caitlin Clark. There are so many stars in the women's game, but somehow hers shines so bright, and so many people came to the game this year to watch Caitlin Clark in action. What is it about her and her game that you think is so captivating?
She's a baller. I mean, we had never seen anybody shoot from the logo before. Think about how enormous Sabrina Ionescu's game is, how great her game is, and how she can knock down these threes. You saw All-Star with her and Curry. And now you have somebody who is taking the game like Trae Young and Dame and Curry and backing it up 4 feet. It's really kind of fantastic because it's changing the game. And now young kids are going to be on the playground, little young girls, you know, jacking up threes on the logo. And it's okay. They blame Steph Curry for ruining the game. He didn't ruin the game. He made the game more exciting. It's called change. And change is hard for some people to accept. So what she did, I'm going to say this, and two of my friends are ESPN family, Jay Willis and Jay Billis. About a month ago, and I heard my brothers talking about, well, Caitlin has to win a championship to win the tip for her to be in the GOAT category. You know, my chip, her chip, is different than your chip. All you had to do as a male athlete is get a scholarship to college, play to the best of your ability, and hopefully win a championship. My chip as a game changer, her chip as a changer of the culture, is not just the championship. She won the freaking chip. 18.7 elevated the game economically. The 4 years when she was at Iowa, they've made somewhere between almost $15 million and $52 million economic impact on that city. People looked at Bo Jackson 4 years before he went to Auburn, what they brought in economically, the 4 years Bo was there, and the 4 years after. He changed the landscape of the business of Auburn University. That's what these young women are doing today. So, again, the tip for us is what Billie Jean King was fighting for. It's about equality. It's about, awareness. And we have to understand the game. Really, the rules of engagement are different and have been different, for the male athlete than it is for the female athlete. So to put a period on it, she won. She not only has the chip, she's got the bag, and she had the load on her shoulders as, Dawn Staley so classy and eloquently said.
Beautifully said, Nancy. I love that perspective. Sticking with Caitlin Clark, do you think her game is going to translate at the WNBA level? There's been some debate on that.
Well, that's women. I'm sorry to have to call out my sisters in this. Kobe Bryant, LeBron James, Kevin Garnett came from high school, went from the league, and you heard nobody in the NBA go, well, they're not going. There's going to be a learning curve. No kidding. Of course there's a learning curve. But when I came out of college and I went to the WBL, I was the MVP just because of the level of talent. And when Taurasi came in, and Taurasi is the best. I love Dee. This is how her motor runs. She's got that Mamba mentality. So she's putting it out there. She's not saying she can't play at that level. She's saying, you better bring your A game because we're coming after you. And coming after you means we're going to make you better because I understand you're the future of the game. So, interpretation is everything. And the casual fan might go, man, I can't believe Diana came at her or Swoops came at her. Cheryl is just enormous and fantastic. She just had her facts wrong and she corrected it, to her credit. But, Diana came in, Brittany Griner came in, Breonna Stewart came in, Maya Moore came in, and they dominated. Who are we to put limits on each other? If you put limits on me, I would never have played in the Olympics in high school. Still the youngest Olympian ever. I would have never, played in a men's professional league. I would have never coached in a men's league. I would have never won a championship as a head coach in the Big Three. Don't put your limits on me. Doesn't Dion say this? Don't let my confidence affect your insecurities. Don't. Just let her shine. And if we fail, then we'll get better. But don't suppress us in what we can or cannot be.
Nancy, along those same lines, you said a moment ago that growth in the women's game, women's sports, is not caveating it by gender and just saying that it's all sports. And so I'm curious from your perspective to get your take on Dawn Staley, who's won her second national championship over 3 years and her third in 7 years. There have been a lot of people that have speculated that Kentucky basketball on the men's side should reach out to her. NBA teams should reach out to her. I'm curious to know if the interest in Dawn Staley and her potentially making that jump would be an evolution of the women's game, or would it do a disservice to the women's game?
It would be an evolution. It's never something that's negative when somebody wants to offer you something that's never happened before. And, you know, Lindsay Harding, who just was the coach of the year in the NBA G League where I coached, now she is going to be in that interview pool with the Charlotte Hornets. It's good to go through the process, right? You don't know what you don't know. And now she's going to have that exercise, which I think is very important. And you don't get jobs on resumes. You get jobs on relationships and the body of your work. So do I think Dawn Staley could coach in the NBA? Hell yes, she could. They respect her. The greatest thing you can be, and you're seeing it right now, unless you're a special coach in the NBA, some of these guys want to play for people that have something on their resume, right? I mean, if you have a pedigree, they want to play for you. This is what I know about coaching in the G League, coaching in the NBA. If I have DeMarcus Cousins, if I can take him from his, and this is hypothetical, if I could take DeMarcus from his rookie contract to his second contract, he's now has a chance to have generational wealth. If I can take him from his second contract to his third contract, his family will eat for the next, 25 years. And if they get to a fourth, like LeBron, I mean, that's just unbelievable because he's unbelievable. You think young men, white men, black men, you think they care that we're a woman or not? They just care, can you change my life? Can you help me reach my goals in life? It's the outside world that's going, well, Nancy Lieberman, can she coach in the NBA? Yes, of course I can. I've been at this since I was, 10 years old. I'm a lifer. But don't pigeonhole me, I'm a woman and I don't have this, this, and this. Dawn Staley has everything. Lindsay Harding, has everything. And she's proven it. So why not give a woman a chance instead of recycling, some of our male counterparts who are really good. But we're going to ask you to slide over a seat.
Nancy, unbelievable words, unbelievable advice and insight there. We do appreciate your time. This was so great. Thank you so much for joining us.
No, I listen to you guys all the time. Thank you for having me on.
There she is. Nancy Lieberman, Hall of Famer. I love what she said at the end there. People are just looking for other people to change their lives and make them better. Who cares what they look like, where they come from? It doesn't matter. Amazing stuff there with Nancy Lieberman. Coming up, we got Canty's Best Bet on Sportsmanlike Moments of the Day. But first, I want to tell everybody about La Quinta. When you're on a business trip, when it goes off the rails, that's a disaster, right? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. Oh my God, that's brutal. So what ends up happening is this. You do a few push-ups in the room, sit-ups in the room. You run around the block or just skip it entirely. That's lame. That's going to throw you off. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every single location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac, weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And, boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
This is the Unsportsmanlike Podcast on ESPN Radio.
All right, time to win some money.
Canty's best bet.
I'm talking dollar bill, y'all. Chasing that bag, y'all.
Of the night.
Oh, so last night we had a bit of a winner. Let's go. UConn basketball covering the spread. And Donovan Klingon under 21.5 total points and rebounds.
Good bet.
That was a good bet.
I'm surprised with something with you with the bet.
What's up?
You said on Friday the Final Four, both men's and women's, are over. And you were right, and you haven't brought that up yet. You said
nobody likes somebody that just hangs on the rim, though.
You just did.
I'm talking about making money now. I'm talking about making money.
You literally said on Friday.
I didn't bet that UConn's men's team and South Carolina's women's team was going to win it all. I didn't parlay those two things together.
Shut up.
When it comes to money, I like to hang on the rim just to remind people that this is the place you come to make a little bit of coin.
I'm just saying.
You helped out our unsportsmanlike community.
I did.
Because they are following along with Canty's best bet, and you made him some cash.
There you go. Made him some cash last night. A little lunch money for the week. Well, we're going to try to keep that thing rolling. No NBA last night, but we got the association in action tonight. And, of course, I'm going to the well. My favorite team outside of the Los Angeles Lakers, the Minnesota Timberwolves. I've made no bones about it. I love Anthony Edwards. I think he's the future face of the league. So we're going to go with the T-Wolves, trying to hang on to that top spot in the Western Conference. We're going to lay the 12.5 against the Washington Wizards because why wouldn't we? They're the Wizards. The only team worse than them is Devontae's Pistons. So we're going to lay the 12.5 with the Timberwolves, and we're going to parlay that with Rudy Gobert over 28.5 total points and rebounds combined.
All right. A question needs to be asked before we get to unsportsmanlike moments because this is a possibility.
What's up?
What happens if the T-Wolves and the Lakers play each other in the first round? Who are you going to root for?
I'm not faced with that problem right now, so I don't want to
go down the road. Okay, so less than a week from now,
I don't want to think about it right now. I don't want to think about it right now.
He's rooting for the T-Wolves.
No, he's not. He's a Lakers
fan. I'm a Lakers fan.
You can have your favorite player in the league doesn't have to be on your team.
How about that? It's a Canty can't lose. How about that?
Oh, there you go.
It's a Canty can't win, though, either.
It's a Canty can't lose.
Yes, he can.
No, you can't.
If the Lakers win, he wins.
Then Anthony Edwards, face of the league, I just dropped a pen, loses in the first round of this face of the league season?
That wouldn't be great.
That would not be good.
That wouldn't be great.
Not good at all.
The best thing is to hope that they don't match up.
I know, but now I'm hoping they do because it would be good for the show. Yeah, all right.
But hold on. The bet plays out at plus 174. So again, T-Wolves laying at 12.5 points, parlayed with Rudy Gobert over 28.5 total points and rebounds, pays out at plus 174.
Time now for the
He survived a terrible, terrible moment in our history.
The most unsportsmanlike moment of the day.
That was terrible.
Was not a great look.
So, Dan Orlovsky, ESPN NFL analyst, has been a huge public supporter of our show, which we appreciate. He has given us so much material, though, without ever joining us. There was Fartgate on McAfee, his eating habits. He was in our party draft last week, and he complained that I picked him in the party draft. Yesterday on NFL Live, yet again, he gives us something, courtesy of ESPN.
Dan, you were supposed to be here in studio. What happened?
My car broke down, driving to studio. Smoke, flames out of the engine, everything. So it's not going well. Some people say oil change. I don't know.
First question was, did you actually change your oil? Yes or no?
I don't personally, but my oil has been changed sometime in like the last 18 months. Okay. So
I just want to get to the bottom of the story. This was apparently not a maintenance issue. Okay, more on that in just a moment. But the story eclipsing everything else.
Dan Orlovsky had not gotten an oil change in 18 months, which is unless you just drive an inch every day. Which I'm going to guess he doesn't.
That's a problem.
How frequently do you get your oil changed?
Every 3,000 miles, I do it.
I just do it when the light comes on in the car.
Once a year.
Okay.
Really? Because you don't think you need it, or?
Well, the particular car I drive only requires that it gets changed once a year.
Yeah, that's that super duper oil.
What
that
kind
he's
of car is it, Kenzie?
That's a super duper
oil. Why don't you tell me the name of the kind of car you drive?
I just said the particular car I drive only requires that it gets changed once a year. Mm-hmm.
So I have.
Or every, I think it's every 2,000 miles or something like that.
You don't drive 2,000 miles?
I live in New York City.
That's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where am I going?
I drive an hour each way now. I drive more now than I've ever driven in my life. So I'm driving an hour each way coming in here, basically. So I do every 3,000 miles. I also have a car from 2016. So I get it every 3,000.
What kind of car is it?
I can't say the name, not because I'm not willing to, because I don't actually know how to. What kind of car do I drive?
An Equinox.
But I call it?
An Equinox.
Okay, we have trouble speaking on this show.
What kind of car does Dan Orlovsky drive?
not a broken one.
A broken one.
The one that's up in flames.
Unbelievable. Congrats to UConn. Greeny coming up next. We are on to Wednesday. We're on Sportsmanlike, presented by Progressive Insurance.
Thanks for listening to the Unsportsmanlike podcast on ESPN Radio. You can listen to Unsportsmanlike live weekdays from 6 to 10 a.m. Eastern on ESPN Radio, the ESPN app, and on SiriusXM Channel 80. You can also watch on ESPN2 and on ESPNU. Unsportsmanlike with Evan, Canty, and Michelle.